Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Well, you know, we asked Jim Polzin, maybe it was a week or two ago, to come and be on the show today to talk about Badger sports, but neither Jim nor I knew for sure that Paul Chryst was going to be fired the night before his appearance as head coach of the Badgers. We're going to talk about the Badger team, about that firing with Jim, and we can talk about some other things, maybe some changes in the Big Ten Conference. We can get into a bunch with him. And Jim, of course, Polzin is a sports reporter, great writer for the Wisconsin State Journal, also hosts the Open Gym podcast on Badger Extra. And as I talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about the Badgers, and what do you expect out of the Badgers for the rest of the season, maybe? What are your feelings about Paul Chryst and his firing? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jim Polzin, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for that that nice intro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I tell you what, I watched your podcast last night, I think it was you were in Green Bay. I think in a coat closet or something. You said,
"Yeah, I was at Lambeau Field when the news broke. It was the fourth quarter, and I was preparing to write a column off that Packers Patriots game, and that those plans changed. Let's just say that."
Yeah, and as I mean, you looked shocked in that podcast.
Yeah, I really was. I mean, like, you know, I'd probably been asked by 10 different people at Lambeau, you know, what does this loss to Illinois mean, and is Paul Chryst going to get fired? And I just didn't see it happening. That's just not the way that UW typically operates. And you know, don't know a lot about Chryst McIntosh. He's been on the job 15 months. So I didn't, you know, as far as big decisions go, I can't say that we have a body of work to look back on. But, you know, I just talked to Chryst Wednesday afternoon, so we're talking a span of 96 hours, and he very much gave what I considered a vote of confidence to Paul Chryst, and was very you know, pragmatic about the fact that this program has been in ruts before and always pulled out of them, and Paul's a guy he's worked closely with for 7 years and has faith in. So to go from that to firing Paul Chryst 4 days later was the reason why I was shocked, and I didn't see it coming now.
You know, I was at the game, the Illinois game, and I had planned ahead of time, because my daughter plays college soccer, I was going to leave right at the end of the third quarter, so I'd have time to get to Milwaukee and watch my daughter play. But I actually left about 10 minutes earlier than that because I was embarrassed for the team. I mean, it was such a horrible showing.
Yeah, and I've gotten that a lot from fans. I think that was kind of the – I don't remember what – I've kind of run out of adjectives the last couple of weeks, Larry. I mean, in terms of how to describe performances, I thought the Ohio State loss on national television was humiliating. But then, you know, in the back of your mind, you're saying it's Ohio State and that's a number three team and it's on the road. And not that it's acceptable, but maybe to some degree understandable. But losing at home to Illinois the way Wisconsin did was embarrassing. I think you nailed it. It was, you know, I think I used the word pathetic. And again, those are strong words, but I don't think they're inaccurate. And, you know, the thing that probably carried some weight is that Illinois is coached by Brett Bielema, the former coach here, and that I think made it even more embarrassing for everybody involved, you know, no matter what your care level is with this program. So it had been a lot of little things adding up over the years in terms of kind of a rut. And the last 2 weeks was just, you know, digging this program into a deeper hole. And I think that's why Chryst McIntosh came to the conclusion he did.
At the same time, I appreciated your, it might have been in your podcast or maybe in some of your the articles that you've written last night and this morning, whatever. You do say this is not the time to be dancing on Paul's grave.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, I understand how much fans want to win. There's a pretty significant segment of this fan base that wants this program to take a step into the elite category. And I get that, you know, season ticket holders pay a lot of money. People invest a lot of time. People are passionate. I understand that. But I do think you need to at least take a step back and say, this is a guy who loves this program, loves this university, had only his players' best interests at heart every moment of his time here. His flaws were that he didn't show enough emotion and didn't always explain himself as clearly as people want. And I understand that knock on him, but you know, don't take that as not being passionate about winning and doing whatever best for this university and this program. And that's why I didn't want to point that out in the column today. Like, hey, this is a good man, and let's not use this as a chance to celebrate. It's a monumental moment in program history, but at least consider that a guy who appreciates this program, who loves this program, you know, received bad news and is probably, you know, having a difficult time coping with the way this all went down.
You know, I just this is just me thinking here, but I'm wondering if it would have happened had it not been for the fact that Jimmy Leonard was there, and I think a lot of people assumed he was going to be the next head coach anyway, and without a strong person to step right in within the program, I wonder if he'd have done it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I asked Chris that last night. You probably, actually, the words probably came out of your mouth way better than they did for me, because I was kind of in scramble mode and off in a corner at Lambeau talking to Chris. But I did ask him that, you know, if, you know, this decision was not easy. So I really hesitate to use the word easier. But the fact that you have kind of this coach in waiting right there on staff had to make your options a little bit better. If you're going to move on from Paul Christ, you're not just handing the job to anybody. You're handing it to the guy that I agree was probably all along the next man to get to become the head coach here. I didn't see it happening on October 2nd, 2022, but I thought that whenever they moved on from Paul, or Paul decided to move on his own, Jim Leonard was next in line. So I think you're right. I think that analysis is solid, that having Jim there probably made this decision slightly easier to do, because you give him a chance the rest of the season.
And I'm thinking about Jim and thinking back to his comments that he made some months back about, or sometime back at least, about Nebraska switching coaches in the, you know, so early in the season. And I'm just wondering, I'm sure he was okay. Yeah, I'm sure he obviously was okay to take the position, but he really talked in a very negative turn about the firing of the Nebraska coach early in the season.
He was concerned about the messages sent to the players. And that was the first thing. I didn't think about it in the moment last night, Larry, but as I was walking from Lambeau to my car and talking to my colleague, Colton Bartholomew, I'm like, hey, you know, did anybody ask him that? Did anybody, you know, at least, you know, ask him to give a response? Because this was only 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago when he said that. And I think that's something we're going to follow up on this week. I mean, I think, you know, Jim's perspective is, he's always going to care about the players here, right? And what's the best path moving forward for them? And that's him leading this program right now. I mean, the season isn't over. There's 7 games to play. There's seniors who deserve every right to play out their career and have every chance at being successful the rest of the season. And I think Jim Leonard's the guy to lead them there. So I can't see hesitation on his part to do that. But I'm certain that 4 weeks ago when he was asked that question, he never could have conceived a scenario where he'd be asked to be put in the exact same position as Mickey Joseph is at Nebraska after Scott Frost was fired. Excuse me.
Let's talk about Jim for a minute, because, and I think you've written about this as well. I mean, here's a guy who, I happen to be the guest coach at the football game when he made his first interception.
Oh, wow.
I was standing on the sidelines and almost got knocked over by him at one point when he was running down the sidelines. On another play that he'd made, but here's the kind of an underdog guy that has just achieved all the way and every step of the way.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. I mean, when he was here, I actually went up to, he's from Tony, Wisconsin, which is up by kind of Ladysmith, Eau Claire area. And I actually went up there for a day, spent some time with his dad and other people in town. It's just, you know, I can't remember what the headline was for that story, Larry, but it was like, everybody loves Jimmy or he's our guy or something like that. Because that was the sentiment in town, that people had known him from the minute, you know, he put on his first basketball shoes or baseball cleats or football spikes, whatever. That they knew he was going to be something special. And not only that he was a special athlete, but the way he carried himself, you know, just humility and pride in what he did and never an ounce of ego. And we've seen that even now. You know, this is 20 years later, and the guy's been in the NFL, had a good career there, had an All-American career at UW, has been a star on the rise coach, defensive coordinator for the Badgers, you know, turned down the Packers defensive coordinator job, you know, 2 years ago or last year. So, you know, every chance to get a giant head and act like something that you're better than someone. And he's never shown it. And so, you know, that's something to consider as we move forward here. The other thing is, you know, if the knock on Paul Chryst was that he just wasn't great in front of the cameras, it's the exact opposite with Jim Leonard. I mean, he sits there every week with us and can really, you know, some people use coach speak. Jim Leonard doesn't. He does a great job of answering questions, providing insight on really any topic you throw at him. So I think that's, you know, he's going to succeed at that part of the job. I have no idea how many wins and losses he's going to have the rest of this season. I think he's walking into a really, really difficult spot. But he'll handle it well. I have no concern about that.
Jim Paulzien, our guest today, great sports writer for the Wisconsin State Journal. He also does Badger Extra as well, which is fun as well. And he's going to be with us up until almost 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, talk more about the Badgers, and we can talk about the Big Ten and the college football in general as well right after the news. Stay with us. Talking sports on the program today, taking a look at college football, zeroing in on the Badgers, and certainly spending some time on the firing of Paul Chryst as coach of the Badgers. Jim Paulzien, our guest, sports writer for the Wisconsin State Journal. He hosts the Open Gym podcast on Badger Extra. Does a wonderful job with it, both his writing and the podcast. Do you attend Badger games at Camp Randall? I've attended many over the years. Are you a longtime fan? Have you seen the game change over the years? What do you think about the firing? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call to begin this segment. Gary and Ripon, will give you a chance. Hi, Gary.
Hello. I'm old enough to remember when the UW played in the Rose Bowl and the Rose Bowl didn't have lights. But I'm wondering where what we call college football is going. I mean, if there's at least 50 Division I schools, does this mean if you don't win the national championship this year, the other 49 are all going to get fired?
Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote today that's the one concern here is the precedent it sets, especially at a place like UW, is, you know, Paul Chryst won over 70% of his games overall and in the Big Ten through 93 games. So, you know, if the next coach comes in and through 93 games isn't at those marks, does that mean that their job is in jeopardy? And I understand that it goes beyond that. You look at trends, and this program was trending in the wrong direction. But if the next guy doesn't have the highs, maybe doesn't have the lows, but is somewhere in the middle and is sitting here without a Big Ten title after seven seasons, is that it for him? And do we just get in this cycle of firing coaches? And that's something I worry about. I mean, all you got to do is look at Nebraska. They fired Frank Solich, 20 plus years ago, and it's been a ongoing cycle of guys trying to be as good as Frank Solich was, and they just haven't found it. They're in the midst of another search right now. So that's the danger is, it's a bold move by Chris McIntosh, and we'll see if it's the right one. I understand there's some risk involved in leaving Paul Christ in his position because, things can spiral out of control even more, but let's not pretend there's not risk involved with this. So I agree with the overall sentiment. I mean, winning has become so important. There's so much money being thrown around. There's so many, boosters with power and say, and, they sometimes don't give coaches long enough to even get settled. I'm not saying that's what happened here because Paul Chris had 7 years, but you see some places where coaches are out after 2 or 3 years. And that's not even enough to get your full set of recruiting classes in and through the door.
Yeah. Gary, thanks a lot for calling. Kind of to go along with that, we had an email from Pat who said, well, Jim Leonard was rumored to be a candidate for the Nebraska coaching position. But Pat wonders about can UW compete with the salary range or the facilities of a football school or any other school with larger booster contributions?
Yeah, well, I think it even goes beyond that. I mean, my initial answer is probably not. I mean, if you're asking for UW to compete with the Alabamas and Georgias and Ohio States, I wrote something last week or before that Ohio State game that, there's been a gap between Wisconsin and Ohio State at times throughout history. That gap has never been greater than it is now, in part because ever since Urban Meyer stepped foot in this conference and then gave way to Ryan Day, Ohio State has just kind of accelerated down the highway at top speed, and Wisconsin's been sitting in the right lane on cruise control, and that separation has become great. And I just don't know, barring Day leaving for the NFL and Ohio State hiring a average coach as its next one, I don't know how that gap is made up, because the priorities at Ohio State from boosters on down to fans are higher than they are at Wisconsin. That's a fact of life that I've seen after being around this program for 25 years. And that's not me casting judgment on UW fans and their priorities. I just think it's different. And it's tough to compete with that. It's tough to compete when football means everything at one place and it's only part of the priority list at another place.
I was thinking back to a show I had a month or two back. We were talking about football and recruiting of students, player athletes, and the guest I had on that day said, well, one problem with Wisconsin is our standards. We're very clean. He says probably the cleanest program in the country, which, from a fan perspective, in some ways, might not be the best way to go about doing things. But it's I kind of see this sometimes when we lose a recruit to another school, because that recruit wasn't able to stand up to the academic standards.
Yeah, I was going to get into that in the last answer because it was in my mind when I started answering that question. But that's part of this too. I mean, we talked about a booster culture and a willing to go all in that I don't know that exists here. But there's other things too. There's an academic component. There's a geography component. Wisconsin. I did this comparison during that Ohio State story too. But Wisconsin gets on average maybe 4 to 5 in-state scholarship players from Wisconsin high schools, and most of those are offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers. It's pretty rare to get a high-end running back or receiver. That happens, but it's rare. You look at Ohio State, I think it was something like 90, close to 100 kids from the state of Ohio in the last 10 to 11 recruiting classes that commit to Ohio State. So you're talking 10 a year, as opposed to 4 or 5, and of those 10, you're talking you know, wide receivers, defensive backs. And then beyond that, Ohio State goes and gets some of the best of the best from Florida and Texas and California and other places. So, yeah, from a geography standpoint, it is hard to compete when a lot of the talent is elsewhere, whether it's the South or Texas or, you know, California or, in this case, Ohio.
Yeah. Let's talk about quarterback Graham Mertz for just a minute, because he was one of the coups, I guess, at the time when we got him, given his skill set and where he was ranked.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of viewed as the Messiah when he arrived as part of that 2019 recruiting class. And, you know, aside from a few games and moments, it just hasn't lived up to that. And it's tough to put a finger on why exactly. You know, I always say, and this is for any sport, you know, development is on the coaches to some degree, but it's also on the player. And it's always a little tricky to assign where the blame falls, and it's usually a little bit of both. You know, is the player doing enough to live up to his or her talent? Are the coaches finding ways to get through to the player and to put them in the best spots to succeed? And that's always a tricky thing to do. And, you know, I covered a lot of basketball over the years, Larry, because that was my primary beat for 10 years. And it's hard to explain how a Frank Kaminsky comes in as a relatively unheralded recruit and turns into a lottery pick, or a Johnny Davis follows that same path, where players that are more highly rated than them coming into college, you know, don't maybe reach their potential. So it's always, you know, it's difficult to kind of decipher and figure out. But, you know, in Mertz's case, I think that is, you know, if you talk about what's happened over the last 3 years, that's certainly part of the issue. I don't want to put the entire blame on him, but no. when you get average to below average play from the quarterback position, it's hard to make up for that.
Well, it was hard watching him having to scramble and getting knocked down. I don't know how many times in that Illinois game, as an example. It's pretty hard when you're running for your life all the time. Sometimes it's I felt bad for him sometimes.
Yeah, and that goes to the other major problem that I've seen over the last probably 3 seasons is offensive line. And this has been a program that, when it's at its best, it has a great, great offensive line. And that group has not been great the last 3 seasons. There's been a drop off. So, you know, getting those two areas, better quarterback play and better offensive line play, I think would have gone a long ways toward all Chris keeping his job, but it was not able to be done.
Elijah in Appleton, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I was wondering, do you think Paul Chris will possibly get a job somewhere else, or do you think that may not happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't see him being a head coach anywhere else. And I don't know how much he would pursue being a head coach at anywhere else at this point. I think Paul loves X's and O's, and he loves football, and I could see him settling into an NFL assistant job or a coordinator job, or, you know, even a consultant job. And you know, I haven't talked to Paul. I've reached out, but I haven't talked to him. I could see him taking some time off. That's what Mike McCarthy did when the Packers fired him. Just kind of took a, you know, season off to recalibrate and catch his wind and, you know, study football without having the burden of having to coach games on Saturdays. Just an evaluation period. And I could see Paul doing that. But that's just a hunch. That's no inside knowledge there. I don't know what he's going to do next, but I'd be very surprised if he landed as a head coach anywhere soon.
Yeah, and of course his contract's being bought out, so there'll be a fair amount of money associated with that.
There is that.
I mean, what is it? Maybe $15 million or something that he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting on those numbers. You know, the buyout was. I tried to get this answer last night from Chris McIntosh. You know, I saw reported at $16 million. I believe it was higher than that, somewhere maybe as close to $19 million. But a settlement was reached between Paul and Chris, and I'm not sure what that number fell at. But it's safe to say that, you know, Chris is going to have a fine. His finances are quite fine coming up.
Barb emailed in with a question. They attended the Illinois game on Saturday. They brought their grandchildren for the first time to feel the Badger atmosphere. And Barb was disappointed. And not only the game, but the atmosphere. She felt like, you know, there were none of the usual oldies played by the band that the students usually sing along to. Instead, they had a DJ playing more modern music, which didn't involve the crowd at all. And she wonders if we're trying to change the culture, and if so, why?
That's a good question. And there's so much, you know, I'm up in the press box and kind of in my own world up there and not out amongst the people that, you know, pay money to be there. And so sometimes some of that stuff gets lost on me. But I do spend, like I said, a lot of time at the Kohl Center for basketball games. And there's been a difference there, too. They have a DJ. It's loud music. I think part of it is you're trying to – you've got different segments of your fan base within that crowd, and you're trying to maybe cater to a little bit of everybody. I mean, you're trying to get the younger crowd involved. They want to get the students involved in games, whether it's at basketball or football. And loud music and loud modern music is a way to do that. And I've heard from older season ticket holders that's not what they want to hear. And it's you know, kind of somewhat annoying to them. And so I worry that they're pushing that fan base away. And those are the people that pay the most money for tickets. And you want to keep those people happy too. So, I mean, I think that's my explanation on why it's happening. I don't necessarily agree with it, and I understand the concerns.
Good points. Somebody else that I was talking to this morning said, well, if what happens if Jimmy Leonard doesn't pan out, I think he's going to be fine. And I think, you know, I'm hoping. I can't wait for, Northwestern are not very good but they're this year, but they always play Wisconsin well. And it would be great if they could get started on the right foot.
Yeah, I mean, this is weird territory. You're taking over a program on a Sunday and trying to get ready for a football game on Saturday while dealing with forget about X's and O's for a second. You're dealing with emotions here and shock within the program and players whose feelings are probably hurt, and you know, and you're in the midst of a two-game losing streak where it's been really ugly the last 2 weeks. So there's a lot that Jim Leonard has to worry about that has nothing to do with play calls and schemes and stuff like that. So I mean, that's his biggest challenge this week. Long-term, and I'm gonna have a column working on it as we speak that's going to run later today and be in tomorrow's State Journal about the spot that Jim Leonard is in. I mean, it's in some ways an audition. It's a seven-game audition, similar to the one Greg Gard had in the basketball program back in 15-16 when Bo Ryan retired midseason. And Greg Gard made the most of that opportunity and parlayed it into a full-time job. Leonard, this is a difficult spot. You're talking about all the things I just mentioned about everything bad going on in the program, and you've got seven games to prove yourself. And maybe part of me believes that the decision's already been made that he'll be the coach in 2023, no matter what happens in the last seven games, because he's handcuffed to a large degree and the amount of changes he can make. This is an offensive staff that he didn't pick. I mean, Jim Leonard didn't handpick these members of his offensive staff. So it's really hard for me to sit here and say it's fair to evaluate him based on what happens from an offensive perspective the rest of the way. I think any true judgment of a coach should be determined after they get to pick their staff. So that's one of the things that Chris McIntosh has to consider as he evaluates these last seven games. And yet I think, you know, if things continue the way they are and this season ends, you know, let's say Jim Leonard goes 2-5 or worse the rest of the way, then Chris McIntosh is backed himself into somewhat of a corner in how he tells the fan base that, you know, we're going to stick with this guy even after things didn't get much better after firing Paul Christ.
Yeah. Tom wondered about recruiting. Is Jim Leonard, does he get, with the head coaching job, does he do a better job of recruiting than Paul Christ would?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, like, I know it's been a weird couple classes now. I mean, if you believe in rankings, and I'm always a little bit skeptical of recruiting rankings, but you know, the 2022 and 23 classes don't look great for UW. However, 19, 20, and 21 are the three highest ranked classes in program history. So I don't want to knock Paul Crist as a recruiter all that much. But Jim Leonard's certainly part of that. I think Jim Leonard's attractive to high school students because he's energetic and, you know, knows this program and knows the kind of fit that you need in this program. I think he'll come up with some stuff that's a little bit outside the box. And maybe that was one of Paul Crist's flaws too, is that I don't know that he totally wrapped his arms around what you have to do these days to be a good recruiter. And I think Jim Leonard, you know, a guy who's 39 and knows, I think he'll maybe do a little bit better job of that. But that's the lifeblood of a program, as you know, Larry, and Jim Leonard's going to have to be really good at it if he wants to keep this job full term.
And if he doesn't, there's Lance Leipold out there at Kansas Jayhawks. They're ranked 19th, I think, this week for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, they're good, and Lance has a history in this program as a graduate assistant under Barry Alvarez. He certainly spent a lot of time, and that ran an excellent program at Whitewater. Went to Buffalo, did a rebuilding job there, and now is in the midst of what looks like a really, really impressive rebuilding job at Kansas. I've got two things coming out tomorrow: the column I mentioned before, and this list of, if I were Chris McIntosh, here's the list of guys I would at least consider, and Lance Leipold is certainly on that list. Not to give away what I'm going to write, but there's a lot of pros in the Lance Leipold category. The one con is that he's 58, and that's, if you're bringing in a guy to kind of rebuild and change a culture, that's an interesting age to bring someone in at. And I also want to see how the rest of the season plays out at Kansas. You know, it's 5-0 right now, can turn into 6-6 in a hurry. And that.
So we've got USC and UCLA coming into the Big Ten. What does that mean for UW-Madison and the rest of the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, I said before that it's going to be that's probably more difficult than ever to win the Big Ten, in part because of Ohio State getting better, Michigan's gotten better, other programs around Wisconsin, Minnesota included, and Illinois seems that's on the way up. All those programs have gotten better than they were a decade ago. So the challenge of winning the Big Ten is harder now than it was when Brett Bielema was here in the 2011-2012 era. And then adding USC and UCLA to that mix, I think, would only make it more difficult. It's great for a lot of things, including the checkbook, the finances. I mean, that media rights deal is going to bring in a ton of money for UW, but it's going to bring a ton of money for everybody in the league. And I'm curious, I've gotten a mixed reaction from fans going out to Los Angeles to see USC or UW-UCLA, I think is attractive to some people. It also seems like a weird fit to some people who, view them as outsiders in this Big Ten. But I don't know how it's going to go. And then we're only talking about football here too, Larry. I mean, there's other sports to consider. And that's the one thing I really worry about is, you're sending a women's soccer program out to Los Angeles on a Thursday night or a Friday night or a Saturday night. Let's not forget that these are student athletes and missing class time is not optimal. So all those details and how this is all going to work and not be a negative, that's kind of, I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, you've had a busy 24 hours.
Yeah, you know what? It's not going to get any less busy. I told Colton that last night. I'm like, listen, man, I've been through this with the Bo Ryan retirement / Greg Gard entry, and you're going to run on adrenaline for a couple of days, and you just got to push through it. So that's I guess it's good that I've been through it once.
Well, I tell you what, I really appreciate it. I knew it was going to be hard for you to take time on a day like today. I'm so glad you were able to do that and willing to do that for us, Jim. You do a great job, and I always enjoy reading your work. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I really appreciate the kind words. It was good to join you.
Jim Polzin, a sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. He also hosts the Open Gym podcast on Badger Extra. I always enjoy reading his comments and his articles, and there will be many of them coming out, I'm sure, over the next few weeks. Just looking ahead to tomorrow, to this show, we are introducing you to a few plants and dishes that made their way here from Africa, and then we're going to talk about the Wisconsin Book Festival. So, all that coming up to celebrate the Book Festival's 20th anniversary, by the way. That's at 11 starting tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.